some rushies. Sorry about yesterday. I had a medical issue I have to take care of, so I couldn't be available. Okay. Let's start with the following pasuk, where they decide to go back to Mitzrayim because it's too frightening to enter Eretz Canaan. Vayamru ish el achiv nit narosh v'nashuva Mitzrayimah. So Rashi offers two pshats, two understandings. The first understanding is very obvious. Let's appoint a new head. It's obvious that Moshe and Aaron and Yeshua and Kalev are determined to enter Eretz Canaan. We're frightened. We have to make a break. Civil war. Let's make a Confederate government so someone else will take them into Eretz Canaan, because Moshe is intending to travel to Eretz Canaan. We don't want to go, so we need to find some other head to lead us back to Mitzrayim. So that makes a lot of sense. Nitna Rosh. But Rashi gives a quote from Rebbe Seinu. Rebbe Seinu Perushu, Lashon Avodah Zarah. Nitna Rosh means, let's find a different god. Now, this is a very strange interpretation of Rashi. Why would the chet of the Meraglim lead to Avodah Zarah? We don't see the chet of the Meraglim as a theological. The ego was the theological mishap. The ego was the theological error. This is more about panic, fear, perhaps betraying a covenant with Eretz Yisrael. How does this become Avodah Zarah? It sounds like there's a conflation here. Let you know, I think he wants to listen. There's a conflation here between the Meraglim and Avodah Zarah. Why would Rashi interpret, let's worship Avodah Zarah, let's choose an idol? So really there are two issues at hand. First of all, because in essence, when you deny Eretz Yisrael, it's like you're denying theology. If you take a look right after the Meraglim, a little bit later, the Parsha right after the Meraglim has a very strange Parsha. We already had all their korbanos chatas in Parshas Vayikra. They were listed in Parshas Vayikra. Individual chatas, collective chatas. But all of a sudden, to find the pasuk, excuse me. Okay. This is the Minachos. Sorry. In Perek Tesvav, v'chi tishku v'lo tasu is kol mitzvos eila shediber Hashem al Moshe. Let's say you don't do all the mitzvos. That's odd. You fail at 6:13, doing special carbon. So Rashi interprets this to mean a special carbon for Avodah Zarah. Although there are normal rules that govern a chatas for chela, for dam, for Shabbos, there's a special chatas, actually two korbanos, if you're over Avodah Zarah. Okay. Interesting. Why is it in Parsha Shlach? Shouldn't this be in Vayikra? Though the other Korban Chatas are in Parsha Tzav? Why is it in Parsha Shlach? Because there's a juxtaposition of denying Eretz Yisrael with worshipping Avodah Zarah. There are certain experiences in Yiddishkeit that are just so seminal that Shabbos is key over Avodah Zarah. Deny Shabbos is deny Hashem created the world. It's like denying the totality of religion and religious theology. Once you walk away from Eretz Yisrael, you're walking away from Jewish history, you're walking away from basic belonging, you're walking away from the covenant with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. It has echoes of Avodah Zarah. It doesn't mean that Api Halacha, you're over to Avodah Zarah, you have to be in a Karban. That's why there's this juxtaposition. And that's why today there's so many millions and millions of Jews whose ritual commitment is weak and whose religious involvement is unfortunately attenuated, but they're holding on to the Jewish identity through Israel, through the land of Israel, through the state of Israel. Because it's a way of belonging. It's a way of belonging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just to Jewish history, in a way that's very primordial and subconscious. So Nitna Rosh is, once Eretz Yisrael is no longer part of their future, part of their experience, their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu starts to erode. Once that relationship starts to erode, they're closer to the world of Avodah Zarah. So Nitna Rosh and Shuvah Mitzrayimah means they're already thinking theologically different than they were a few minutes ago. And that's how they fall into Avodah Zarah. Now the second issue is not just theologically, but psychologically. You see, we don't really live in the world of paganism. So when we look back at that world, it seems very foreign to us. Who would worship an idol? Who would worship these gods? It just seems so cartoonish. It seems so infantile. Monotheism seems so much more elegant, so much more rational in an odd way. Not rational in a cognitive way, in an empirical way, but in a cognitive way. all of a sudden these gods and angels and idols and images, and but their world was a very frightening world. We live in a world of reason and science, so we're able to predict our world, we're able to control our world. And just think about what happened in the last 2-3 years. These viruses, these pandemics used to take hundreds of millions of lives. They used to last tens of years, dozens of years. All of a sudden it was difficult, it was challenging. Unfortunately, millions of people lost their lives and many people are sick. But look how quickly we're able to develop a vaccine. Look how much we're able to control the virus, to predict the virus, to test for the virus. My wife and I was telling my wife a couple of months ago, in 100 years when the next pandemic comes, they're going to have a way to actually detect where the virus is, an infrared scanner. They'll actually see the virus and they'll look back at our pandemic and say, could you imagine living through a pandemic, not being able to know where the virus was? Well, that's how we look back at the Spanish flu and look back at previous. Could you imagine living through a pandemic without a vaccine, which is essentially how they had to solve it. So, but they lived in a very frightening world. And in this frightening world, they were looking for order. They were looking for some sense of control. That's why people bought into hierarchical and oppressive forms of society, because as long as there was a ruler who could keep order, who could keep the world from falling into instability, it was worth to abdicate your freedom, to abdicate your dignity, because the other option, the other alternative was too frightening. It was a world of chaos, it was a world of disarray, it was a world of monsters and dragons and dinosaurs. So whatever price it took to get order and control and stability. And part of that was the world of paganism. This paganism is when human beings create their gods. They also control their gods. When you fashion your god, monotheism is hierarchical and God is on top. We live life as a summoned being. We don't control our gods and we listen and we submit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in paganism, you create the gods. You distribute the gods amongst different experiences, fire, water, sun, light, dark, good, evil. And you can bribe the gods with virgins, you can bribe the gods with flattery, you can bribe the gods with gold and silver. So essentially they become your agents, they're your mercenaries. They're larger than life, they may not listen to you, but if you just bribe them with enough charity, with enough money, women, drinks, flattery, songs, praise, you can control them. So whenever people feel panicky, so there's a tilt towards paganism, they're very frightened here in Parsha Shlach. It's a very, very frightening specter to enter this land. And they'd rather a world in which they can control their gods and draft them for their needs rather than be subject to the decisions of a god in heaven who determines where they'll enter. So this is not just theologically. Once their bond to Eretz Yisrael begins to fray, they migrate to the world of paganism. It's all psychological. When they're afraid, the more frightened they are at entering Eretz Yisrael, the more they're reaching out. It takes a lot of courage and confidence to be monotheistic, to be able to submit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the world of paganism is built on fright and panic. And because they're panicking, and Parsha Shlach is a study in people panicking, because they're panicking, they're looking for a different type of religion. They can control their gods, even at the price of losing their freedom. They know they're going back to Mitzrayim. They're not going to receive a hero's welcome. They're not going to receive a ticker tape parade when they come back to Mitzrayim. Just imagine the scene if you were scripting the movie. They're going to walk back into Egypt, and they'll all be waiting for them. They're going to put clamps on them and torture them and kill a few hundred people, because these were the rebellious slaves. And that's what you do when the rebellious slaves are recovered. You torture them. You batter them. They're willing to give up their freedom for a sense of control, because fear is more devastating than lack of freedom. People who are prisoner syndrome, people who are afraid to live the freedom, because freedom always brings choice, and choice always brings the potential for failure. When you abdicate your freedom, you essentially say, it's cathartic. I'm not in control of my situation. Determinism, Spinoza is very comforting. If you're not in control of your future, you're just reacting to physical forces. So determinism is a very, very, that's why it was so popular in the 19th century, the different forms of determinism, Marxism, we don't have freedom of choice, we're driven by class warfare, Darwinism, we don't really have freedom of choice, we're driven by some larger evolutionary wheel that we're just a spoke of. Freud, we don't really have choice, it's because I really love my mother and hate my father, so I'm driven by these subterranean forces that are stronger than me. But there's a certain security, ironically, in determinism and lack of freedom, that you don't have to make decisions. Freedom of choice is a very, very heavy prospect. You have to make decisions. I could kill you right now, but when I grab a gun and get I'm 2 minutes away, that specter could be very, very devastating. I have the freedom to jump off a roof, or freedom to kill, to commit a moral sin. When I don't have that freedom, that I've advocated, that freedom of consciousness, freedom of choice, it can be very, very cathartic and very releasing. So they're afraid of the future. When they're afraid of the future, they're looking for a model of religion that will grant them security and control rather than the great unknown submitting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a very interesting Rashi. It's three words in Rashi. How did they get from the slander of Eretz Yisrael to Nitne Rosh and Hashem Mitzrayim? Part of it is once you walk away from Eretz Yisrael, your bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu starts to fray. Part of it is just the fear. Okay. So now HaKadosh Baruch Hu, another interesting Rashi about faith. We think that faith is mental. We think that faith is a belief, and either you have it or you don't have it. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is issuing the sentence, and of course there are two people who are excluded from the sentence who will enter Eretz Yisrael, the Avdi Kalev, Egev Haisa Ruach Acheres Imo, Vayimale Acharai. Very strange word, Vayimale Acharai, he filled after me. What is he filling? Vayelech Acharai, Vayishalech Acharai, Vayamin Bi, Vayimale Acharai. So Rashi, of course, notices it. Vayimale es libo acharai. There's some words missing. If you notice in Parsha Shlach, there are a lot of half sentences. That's more of a global discussion. Why in Shlach there are sentences that are missing words? Because it's a broken narrative. Because the narrative isn't fulfilling. We're supposed to enter Eretz Yisrael. So once that narrative is broken, there's literary fissures in the text. There are words that are missing. So it should be Vayimale es libo acharai. He filled his heart. So essentially, faith is an issue of your heart, not your head. And it's a decision you make. Because you can fill something up. You can decide to fill up a cup of water. You can decide not to fill up a cup of water. So we all feel that faith is something cognitive and something that you know, either you have or you don't have. Faith is a decision. And the ways you get to faith is when you fill your heart and you fill your emotional world with a Kaddish Baruch. And that's a decision. Namely, There's one level of faith if you just don't believe in God, or you do believe in God, agnostic or not. But even people who know there's a God, and no one is doubting that there's Hashem in this parsha. This isn't denying the presence of Hashem. It's how central Hashem is to your own life, how much confidence you take from Him, how you face life's challenges and adversity. Do you walk with Hashem? Do you not walk with Hashem? How that influences your poise as opposed to your panic. So the decision here is a voluntary one. Do you decide to feel Hashem's presence, draw upon Hashem's presence, lean upon Hashem when you're facing adversity, or not when you're facing adversity, even in the day-to-day, or you decide not to be mimalei eslibo. You know Hashem exists, but you watch Hashemayim, Shemayim, Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Levei Adam. You stay in your corner, I'll stay in my corner. Right? Every chait, sometimes people sin because they're heretics. 99% of the sins are not because we deny Hashem's presence. I need time out. You stay where you are. You go to your corner. I'll go to my corner. I need to do this. You're not denying Hashem. You're just distancing Him from your heart, from your view, from your experience. So faith sometimes is theological and theoretical and philosophical, but very often, maybe to use a different word, belief is, well, you already have faith, but the question is how deeply ingrained and how much a part of your day-to-day should you say to make the summit is, which is why when HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes the sentence for those who didn't believe, so what's the lesson of the pasuk? Also an interesting word, b'mispar yamim asher tarta nisaret arbaim yom hashana yom hashana tisru azavona sechem arbaim shana v'yedatem es tenu asi. Also, very strange word. A lot of strange words in Shlach. V'yadam. A lot of words that don't fit. Again, because nothing's really fitting in Shlach. V'yadatem es. Everything's off. It's broken. V'yadatem es tenu asi. The literal word of tenu is movement. Tenu asi is to move. Is to redirect. Not with an ayin, with an aleph. But so what does Rashi say? That they will know tenu asi. They will know my tenua. So Rashi says they will realize the impact and the consequence of Shehiniyosam es levavchem me'acharai, that they move their heart. Tafnun aleph means to move away from something, not to move like to walk. That's tenua with an ayin. It means to redirect, to shift away from, focus. They will know that they move their hearts away from me. What do you mean they move their hearts away from me? They didn't believe in Eretz Yisrael. Again, you face a decision. How am I going to face the fear? How am I going to stand up to this fear? Am I going to fill myself with the presence of Hashem? Will I immerse in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? or will I move away, knowing that he's there, but deciding to handle and to navigate this crisis without his presence? So the combination of these two words, vayimalei acharai, Rashi adds the word vayimalei eslibo acharai, those that did choose belief, as opposed to those that didn't choose belief, v'yidatem estinuasi, reminds us that belief sometimes is a choice, and it's a decision as to experience life with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not, it's not just, oh, you're sitting in Elisha ben Avoya, does he exist, does he not exist, Plato, does he, it's not just sitting amongst Greek philosophers and philosophizing about Hashem's presence, it's even when you know Hashem is there, how much do you bring him into your heart, you fill your heart with him, how much do you move your focus away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, maybe one more Rashi, since, interesting Rashi towards the end, since a little bit about tzitzis, we didn't get to talk about tzitzis. There are many, 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 many layers of symbolism to tzitzis. We get caught up in the tchelis, we get caught up in the 613, those are the two things that immediately grab our attention. But what's fascinating is that the Torah calls it wings, because there's a double entendre, kanfei v'gdehem v'arasam, nasim al tzitzis hakanaf. So, literally, kanaf means a wing. We interpret it to mean the edges. But there are other ways to say edges. Say, beget, chut. Why does the Torah constantly say the word kanaf, wing? So Rashi, of course, points out, Hashem is referencing the earlier time he said wings. Vasa aschem, not buffalo, and I get excited. Vasa aschem, al kanfei nisharim, vavi, buffaloes don't have wings. Al kanfei nisharim, vavi eschem, Eli, that I will carry you on wings of angels. So it's interesting, big question, why is tzitzis inserted into the end of Shlach? So the obvious one is Lasur Azar, it's Lasur. Sometimes curiosity killed the cat. Sometimes you just have to close your eyes and not look at everything that comes into your field of vision. And maybe they should have been a little bit more circumspect about what they... Life is sometimes not just about what you process, but what you choose to expose yourself to. Not just how you filter things, but what you do so in life, in media, in faith. Maybe we should all go out right now and study Christianity. Because if not, we're not being intellectually honest, because we don't know fully what we are accepting or aren't accepting. Maybe we should all go out and maybe we should raise our children. Sometimes I hear people, I told this story the other night, a couple of years ago, about 10, 15 years ago, there was a panel over Hanukkah, which they invited a very well-known Haredi rabbi. It was about Haredim, not Haredim. So they invited him to speak. And at some point, one of the Israeli kids got up in front of a packed audience in the auditorium and said, I don't understand something. He says, why don't you just bring your Talmidim to yeshiva and let them see the Bachram here in yeshiva? They'll realize you can be a Ben Torah even if you serve in the army. So I was so impressed with his answer. He said, are you crazy? He said, I can't bring my Talmidim here. That will ruin all my propaganda. I have to convince him that you guys are Amaratzim, or else I won't buy into my system. I get riled the boys so much, and I'm saying, why are you so riled? All of life is a balance between exposure and indoctrination. What do you think? You think it's a way to raise kids? Just throw the world open to them and let them make choices? We all find our balance between exposure and direction, and what we do want to expose and we don't want to expose. So he's just saying, my level of exposure / indoctrination is a little bit different from yours. And I choose not to show him the Bachram. Again, I don't agree with that position. But it's a logical position, it's a moral position, it's a tenable thing. It's so upset with you, and you don't have a balance between, you just expose yourself to everything. So I was talking about this, but right. Yeah, well, what's my train of thought? I'm a little tired this morning. Right. So maybe you shouldn't have looked at every single issue. Maybe faith should have been much more directing. Okay, find out the battle plan. But now don't start looking around who's bearing whom and how tall the giants are. Sometimes when you believe in something, you tell yourself, okay, I know what I want to look for. I don't have to look at other things. Relationships also. Some of these decide based on relationships what relationships you want to cauterize and eliminate from your life because it's too painful. So when it comes to life, it's not just looking at the entire world and experiencing it. It's a question of selecting out what you do, what you don't. Too much selection, you become obviously schizophrenic, but or bipolar because you're selecting everything, but it's a question of what you want to process and live with, what you don't want to live with. But there are many other reasons that tzitzis is introduced in Shlach. That's a big question. Why is it in Shlach? It doesn't belong in Shlach. One of the answers is that Kadosh Baruch was taking him back to an earlier time. You may have lost Eretz Yisrael. You may be wandering through the desert, but you're still supernatural. And when you put on your tzitzis and you think about the corners, just remember the Jews hover above history and you take flight. And those are the psukim from Yisro. And the second imagery that Rashi quotes is, why the four? As in a five-corner baguette. Okay, so the answer is because four is most symmetrical to the human body. But if Rosh Baruch Hu could have told us to wear a three-cornered baguette, or to maybe wear a five-cornered baguette, it would have looked a little odd, but... And tefillin don't look odd? I mean, in terms of, it's not natural to put on tefillin. We don't think it's odd, but Hashem wants us to wear parshas on our bodies, so we wear parshas on our bodies. It's not as if all ritual clothing is tailored to human dimension. Sometimes the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants us to wear things that don't look as if they're natural to the human body. So why four? So Rashi says, because of the four lashonos of Gula, So Kodesh Baruch Hu is reminding them that even once the narrative was shattered, even though it's going to take you 40 years to wander through the desert, and even when you're in Gullus, don't forget two things. Number one, you're surging towards a redemptive conclusion, and those four lashonos of Gula and the redemption of history is inevitable. So even when you're in your lowest point, Shlach is a very, very low and dark place. Just remember there are four Lashonas, there are four different, and four Lashonas is just like four suns, like in Mecca. It's not just, there are four different modes of redemption. We don't have time to discuss them now. There are four different aspects of redemption. It's not just four symbolics. There are four different facets and four different features to the redemptive process. So when you put on four, you're living through all those four. And don't forget that you take flight. You're an angel. This is an important message after Shlach, to a degree, which is what Chassidus delivered in the 18th century, because the 18th century was the Parsha Shlach of Jewish history. It was probably the lowest moment in Jewish exile, and Chassidus came to restore some of that belief in the relationship with Hashem, in the supernatural state of the Jewish people, in the inevitability of redemption. So this is essentially why I read Rashi here in the end of Shlach, that's what Chassidus was trying to do, and that's why I'd say the Jewish spirit in the 18th century, because without it, it would have been a very, very dark experience. Okay? So, three interesting Rashis. One Rashi is, why did they veer towards Avodah Zarah? Where did that come in? So part of it is the rupture of Eretz Yisrael. Part of it is how you face fear. In a more frightening reality, it was harder for them to remember. We take monotheism for granted because we've already experienced it for thousands of years. This is training season. They're wrapping their heads around monotheism, and at this point they just can't do it anymore. They just can't believe in a God they can't control. They're looking for a God they can control, because that's what helps them write. And people feel anxiety. What do you eat? You try to do something you can't control that puts you into a place that, okay, I'm just going to eat and eat because I'm in control of the food that I'm eating. It gives you, like people sometimes use control. People are very obsessive. If you have OCD tendencies, so OCD tendencies tend to come out when you're afraid, when you have fear and your anxiety, because you want to control your life. So how we face a world that we can or can't control is part of healthy, balanced emotional experience. And we have to learn to live without control sometimes, learn that we can't control everything. So they're looking for control, and the solution is Avodah Zarah. That was the ancient pagan world, which is frightening. The second issue is that faith is a decision. Maybe the theory of faith is something you have to accept, but the way you live with faith is, do you fill your heart or do you walk away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And then finally, the reconstitution of Jewish identity after it had been shattered for the mitzvah tzitzis. This is a way to literally reclothe the Jewish imagination in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, because we had lost it. Okay? Tomorrow we'll get back to Hasidus, because we forgot. We didn't have a chance yesterday.